you can make your family's life much brighter. You will find your work much lighter. It's as easy as can be to live better electrically.
Buck Throwkill, a retired service member from Fayetteville, has been in Creston for more than a week, helping cleanup efforts.
Debris, trees, everything, and it's under the water. Any little single piece of rebar sticking up will catch any and everything that comes by.
He and other volunteers in canoes, excavators, and waders have been pulling out items blocking waterways. Those things are redirecting water in new directions.
The springtime, when it thaws, all of this flooding is going to happen all over again. The locals know it.
The third part of this report is going to be a little different as it concerns something that goes far beyond a hurricane flooding the mountains of western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee. But I just wanted to say up front that it's already starting to dip below freezing temperatures there, and there are people who are sleeping outside of their destroyed homes and tents right now. We have been getting messages from people who are extremely concerned about the toxicity of the water and mud that has now moved through western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee.
But they don't have water to do the cleanup process with. So they're moving mud by hand. They're picking up equipment. They've been warned that some of what's inside may, in fact, even be toxic. So they're doing the best they have with some of the supplies they have. But many of the people behind me here, these are not experts in this kind of cleanup. They are the artists, the business owners themselves, doing the best with what they have.
He says a horse from a farm next to this bridge has died from drinking this contaminated water and eating hay bales that were sitting in the flood.
There's cattle lifestyles up here, people raising beef, horses. Every bit of hay, you'll drive down the road to see round bales of hay and go, oh, they're good to go. No, it's no good. It can't be used.
Even Madison County Chamber of Commerce has now put up a warning on their official website that the mud in Marshall, North Carolina, just for one example, is absolutely toxic, that they have hazardous material protocols now in effect.
Downtown Marshall, North Carolina was swallowed by catastrophic flooding. Now what remains is covered in a thick coat of mud and debris that's considered hazardous.
Some of the volunteers that are starting to come in here are having to wear hazmat suits because all of the mud and all the debris is now considered to be hazardous.
And that everyone should be using caution anywhere where there is mud or water. It says an abundance of solvents or caustic chemicals is eating people's clothing, and that people are getting chemical burns from coming into contact with this mud, and that it's contaminated with household chemicals, fuel oils, gas, animal and human waste, trash. They're saying there's syringes in there, garden chemicals, pesticides, all kinds of stuff is now in this mud. And they're saying PPE is now mandated for working with it, including respirators. Don't go in the mud. Use caution and avoid flood water and mud unless absolutely vital. So there's a secondary issue that is now developing here, and it's also making people ill. I have people writing me who know people that are working in Lake Lure that are getting sick. There are messages being posted on Facebook groups about people coming down with respiratory illnesses and pneumonia-like illnesses that are not pneumonia, and they're having lung pain. I don't think people realize how toxic, how absolutely toxified this area is.
And you can see how deep it is to the altar.
For 24 hours, 4 to 5 feet of water flowed through the church before receding.
I'm sick,
yeah.
But I'm not. I mean, I have some allergies going on, and I have some, like, internal stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I had food poisoning, but it's been long enough that if I had food poisoning, it would be passed. And my husband's the same way, and I'm convinced we got bacteria or something from somewhere.
I've been sick since this started, like, with an infection, lymph nodes and stuff, it won't go away.
I mean, but, like, you drive down the road, like, want to know in Old Fort. I mean, it's a dust bowl.
It's a dust bowl.
And they think, how many of those homes have asbestos in them?
Yeah.
The insulation.
There's potentially a huge environmental disaster happening in Asheville, North Carolina, and everyone downriver. This is reportedly the IPEX plastic PVC factory. Everything looks to be destroyed, and chemicals have been leaked into the French Broad River.
It's probably the PVC, the powder form.
This is the only disaster I've ever worked, and I've been doing this since Hurricane Katrina. It's the only one I've ever worked that the federal government is actively working against recovery. This one, completely different. They're actively working against the recovery process, which tells me they've got something to hide.
And Bear from the internet, he's from Grindstone Ministries. They were one of the links I put for people to donate in the pinned comment under this series of videos. He did an interview with Billy Bond, who's a permaculture guy, just a couple of days ago. And I think everybody just needs to hear what this man is saying about what is going on with this mud in this area.
And I believe that they do have something to hide, because we're already getting reports, firsthand reports, of cadaver dogs that are dying, that we're walking through these areas, walking, especially in your neck of the woods, walking through the silt, walking through the muck, even going through decon afterwards, being decontaminated. You know, I've got reports. One guy had 10 dogs there, and four of his dogs are already dead, and the other six are dying. Got another woman, firsthand account, that was rescuing horses, was leading horses through the muck and the mud and the river. And the horses are so incredibly sick that they started doing blood tests on the horses. And the tests that have been coming back are, in their words, literally off the charts. They've never seen anything like this before. Citizens, the last report I got in your area was 50 to 60 people in Western North Carolina that are already inexplicably sick. And by inexplicably, I mean they don't know what's wrong with them. And the reason for that is all kinds of shit has washed into that river. Literal human feces from septic tanks that were ruptured, wastewater treatment plants, thousands of cadavers, even though the official reporting is that it's only 213 dead. Well, that conflicts with one coroner that I personally spoke with that had 1,200 people in reefer trailers. Then you've got dead animals, NFS, Nuclear Fuel Services, that lost, the official reporting is they lost training barrels. Well, we spoke to the former training manager at NFS who said, nope, those aren't training barrels. Those are live barrels.
Wow.
And officially the number was, well, it's just one live barrel. Then it was five live barrels. Then it was a semi-load, 250 55-gallon drums. And we know because the semi was found and documented under 10 foot of mud. So you've got nuclear fuel or waste fuels. You also have the facility at NFS. They said they lost a pole barn in the flooding. They didn't. They lost a 10,000 square foot decontamination unit and all the contaminated parts and all the decontamination equipment washed into the river. And you've got a PVC plant. You've got multiple concrete plants, all of which washed into the river. There are hundreds of homes that should be condemned. And I'm not for the government condemning people's homes. These people do not need to be mucking out their homes. They don't need to be pulling out the insulation and the drywall down to bare studs and airing it out and starting over again, because the silt is deadly. The silt will kill you. And FEMA has been slow rolling this, and in conjunction with local and state emergency management, has been slow rolling the announcement that, hey, the silt will kill you, because they want to cover up what will likely be a massive conglomeration of giant lawsuits.
So I need to interject here, because I just think some of the stories that are coming out right now in the wake of this hurricane are so odd. Like, immediately they're telling everyone everything is fine. And I don't know how they could really know that. Case in point, you heard him talk about Nuclear Fuel Services. Nuclear Fuel Services is a company that sits basically 0.2 miles away from the Nolichucky River. It's like right there in Irwin, Tennessee, on the river. It's a major supplier of fuel for the U.S. Navy's nuclear-powered fleet, and it has been since the 1960s. However, back in 2021, they received a $57.5 million grant to reprocess weapons-grade uranium into nuclear reactor fuel. So that's what's been going on right there on the Nolichucky River in Irwin, Tennessee, for several years now. And apparently, 13 days ago, somebody in the r/radiation subreddit posted this picture of a barrel reportedly found in the French Broad River in Asheville, North Carolina. And the barrel says B&W Y12 LLC, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, radioactive material on it. And so a week ago, you have this story coming out of WBIR-TV Knoxville. No, this barrel reportedly found in an Asheville River did not contain radioactive waste. Although at one time, it technically actually did, just not supposedly at the time that it went into this river. So what this debunking story claims is that, yes, this actually is a barrel that originated in the Y-12 National Security Complex in the Oak Ridge, Tennessee facilities that process uranium. And yes, some of these barrels did end up in Irwin at Nuclear Fuel Services. And yes, they were kept in a warehouse offsite that was actually heavily damaged in the floods, resulting in some NFS property being carried away by floodwater. But it's just empty, clean containers and training equipment and protective equipment. And even though it says fissile radioactive material on this barrel's empty and clean. And so it's fine. It's basically what it says. It's basically this, yes, yes, but no, it's fine. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. And I just think it's interesting how quickly they were saying everything is totally fine with this facility. So the timeline on this storm in western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee is that it moved inland, degenerated into a post-tropical cyclone over Tennessee on September 27th. It stalled out there and sat there all day on the 28th and didn't dissipate until the following day on the 29th. But somehow, by 5:25 p.m. on Saturday the 28th, while the storm is still stalled out over Tennessee for the rest of that day and part of the next day before it dissipated, on that day, Nuclear Fuel Services, located right next to the Nolichucky River, is already telling everyone their nuclear materials are safe, it's all safe, following the flooding that was presumably still ongoing at that time. You see what I'm saying? Do you see why that comes off as just a little bit odd?
It has changed forever, so it's not going to go back to how it was.
And I did a little digging, and this area on record had numerous EPA Superfund sites in it, including a former electroplating facility called CTS in Asheville that contaminated the groundwater with a toxic carcinogen called trichloroethylene that was found to be in the water more than 4,000 times the safe standard. And they're still in the process of trying to clean that up and monitor that. And then on top of that, you have the former Chemtronic site, which was disposing of things from Northrop Grumman and Chemtronic, where they were producing CS tear gas, Mark 24 flares, and the top secret BZ, which is a powerful hallucinogen that was created to take out enemy populations. They were making all this stuff on that site back in the Cold War era. And the disposal methods of these things are horrifying. You had drums of BZ and CS just being buried on the site. You had liquid chemicals being dumped down the drains and fed into nearby streams, and explosives being incinerated on site in what the EPA referred to in documents as the acid pit area. And in 2016, it was reported that the Chemtronic site, it will take at least 30 more years before the groundwater is safe to drink there. And that was in 2016. So these are places that were also flooded. The EPA did put a message up on their website about CTS that simply reads that the EPA has evaluated it and determined that there were no storm impacts from Helene. But These are just the officially designated EPA Superfund sites. According to Mountain Express of Asheville, there are also at least 50 hazardous sites just in Buncombe County alone, and the majority of these sites have not been dealt with yet. So you have things like PCBs, DDT, paint thinners, pesticides, all kinds of stuff, and they've just been kind of fenced in. They just put a fence around some of these areas, and they're just sitting there. They have not been cleaned up yet.
The water coming from where all this kind of started in Tennessee, that was already people were already getting sick because of chemicals being dumped there. There's actual nuclear stuff, that all kinds of things. And now you're adding to it, like you said, there's mildew, there's literal death, animals, human beings, there's sewage, there's more chemicals that were dumped, whether purposely or not, in Asheville, where you can, you know, as nasty as it is, you see like soap bubbles almost on top.
Yeah.
So people are having to, if they're going to bathe, that's the water they have. Mm-hmm. Or if you're drinking water, I don't think Old Fort has public water yet.
They have no
water. If you have a well, I mean, obviously this is what you're getting.
Right.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple documentaries that have come out now about the already toxified waterways in North Carolina. The tests have been done all over the entire state and have found forever chemicals, PFAS, and things like that in the water.
This map shows PFAS contamination across the U.S., and many communities have yet to be tested.
So there's some serious problems already with water contamination in North Carolina. It's an issue. It was an issue before this happened.
Discharge from local companies bubbling up to the surface in the water there.
At first glance, the discharge looks unnatural and suspicious, but this process is totally legal in Tennessee, and more importantly, this is safe.
And even just a quick search on the internet will show you that Tennessee had a lot of water issues going on prior to this event as well. But the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation put out a temporary water contact advisory for East Tennessee areas affected by the flooding on October 2nd. And it says here they're advising the public to avoid all contact with water bodies affected by the extreme flooding in East Tennessee, which applies to surface waters in the Nolichucky, French Broad, Pigeon, Doe, and Watauga River watersheds, as well as any other waters that were affected by this flooding. And it says here, in the aftermath of unprecedented flooding caused by Hurricane Helene, several wastewater treatment plants have been compromised and are temporarily unable to completely treat effluent before it enters receiving waters. In addition, sewer line crossings may have been severed or damaged, allowing raw sewage to enter streams, and individual septic systems may be compromised across the region. And they're saying it's issued out of an abundance of caution. They don't have any specific data, and I don't think they would by October 2nd. But they also have not updated this since then, which means that this advisory is still in effect and has been in effect this entire time. And it's also been reported one of the main wastewater treatment plants that services Spruce Pine, North Carolina, and Mitchell County was completely destroyed. Wastewater treatment plant located just north of Main Street is entirely out of operation, which serves several thousand people in Spruce Pine, along with multiple Mitchell County schools and some county residents. And they're trying to do an education campaign right now to tell people not to flush, because whatever they're flushing down the toilet is likely ending up directly in rivers and streams. And it says that two of the buildings that were here floated away, and the remaining treatment tanks have taken on a gangrenous green color. And this facility was built directly on the river. So all of that stuff just went right into the water. It says in this article, once again, that residents should take heed when approaching or working in water and streams that could be contaminated by this flood. North Carolina State Senator Ralph Hayes gave a press conference apparently last week, and he said that treatment plant is gone. He said that it does not exist, it is completely unsalvageable, and that it's going to likely take 4 years to build a new one. So all of those, there was 15,000 people in Spruce Pine, and thousands of people now are going to be without wastewater treatment facilities for years now. I don't know what's going on in that well water at this point, but I just think an abundance of caution is an understatement. And at least somebody was talking about this. U.S. News put out this article on September 30th, just pretty much right after this happened, reminding everyone of a basic fact. That is a known fact in this country. Flooded industrial sites, toxic chemicals pose silent threats after a hurricane. In disasters like Helene, residents may not hear about releases of toxic chemicals into water or air until weeks later, if they do at all. Hundreds of industrial facilities with toxic pollutants were in the path of Helene and near the coast and into Georgia, for example. It swept over paper mills, fertilizer factories, oil and gas storage facilities. And it mentions here that paper mills are some of the most polluting industries on the planet. In Florida, a retired nuclear power plant was hit with a 12-foot storm surge, which inundated not only the buildings, but an industrial wastewater pond. And there's spent nuclear fuel stored at that site, which was also flooded during another hurricane in 2023. But Bloomberg reported it's believed to be secure. Well, believed to be secure and secure is just not really the same exact thing, is it? And then it goes on to say that more rain was dumped on industrial sites in the Carolinas and Tennessee, some near waterways that quickly flooded with runoff into the mountains. In disasters like these, the industrial damage can unfold over days, and residents may not hear about releases of toxic chemicals into the water or air until days or weeks later, if they find out at all. Yet pollution releases are common. So I was getting told that I'm fear-mongering for warning people about the potential toxicity of this water in this mud and what might happen if you come into too much contact with it. And it's not fear-mongering, it's common sense to protect people. If you're going into these areas, to protect yourself, because we don't know and we won't know for a while how safe that water and that mud is. But the stories that are coming out and the messages that people have written me and the things that I'm seeing on social media, there are a lot of people that are talking about being very concerned about this.
I'm telling you. And this is part of why Grindstone is not mucking houses. I don't want our people in these houses. We don't want them in the silt. We have pallets of PPE for anybody that has to go anywhere near it. There is bad stuff in the water. There is bad stuff in the silt.
So it only makes sense to be safe and protect yourself. It's not fear-mongering to have this conversation. This is a conversation that should be had. And I just think it's sad that years and years of these events happening. We have years and years and years. I'm an American, okay? I've been here for 4 decades. And if you've been even paying even the slightest bit of attention at all, then you know how this works. There's always this immediate, everything's fine, don't worry about it. And then later stuff starts coming out. The idea that anyone could just trust automatic reassurances of safety that are based on literally nothing, just because somebody in a position of authority got on TV and said it, I don't understand how that still works on people at all at this point. I really don't. You want to know what we'll never forget? We'll never forget how the head of the EPA, like 2 days after 9/11 happened, got on TV and said, it's fine. The air is fine to breathe. There's no asbestos. It's great.
Just 2 days after the attacks, EPA Administrator Christine Todd Whitman reassured New Yorkers about the air.
Well, if there's any good news out of all this, it's that everything we've tested for, which includes asbestos, lead, and VOCs, have been below any level of concern for the general public health.
Was it, though? No, it absolutely was not. And 2 years later, in 2003, the Inspector General for the EPA came out and said there was no basis for those claims. So why'd she say it? Why do they always say it? That's a question no one ever asks themselves, but maybe they should. After Hurricane Katrina, the EPA took 400,000 laboratory samples of soil and flood sediment. Later, an analysis was done of that data, the policy frameworks that guided the collection and organization of it, and the agency's subsequent claims about the relative absence of risk, which is another nice way of just saying the safety, of people returning to the city, residents going back to the city, right? This analysis revealed, quote, some of the ways in which risk assessment in the U.S. environmental regulatory system is deeply structured by the production and reproduction of ignorance. In short, it is set up to fail. It is literally built to not do the thing it's supposed to do. It's not just deeply flawed. It is structured to not do its job. It is structured to fail. And they define ignorance here straightforwardly as an absence of knowledge. So 400,000 soil and flood sediment samples structured to give you no actual information upon which subsequent claims that it's safe to go back into the city. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? No one fails that hard. No one fails that hard. Again, that's not incompetence. What we're talking about here is not incompetence. So you need to protect yourself. If you are in this area and you're getting around this mud,
stay out of the water. Don't drink the water. Again, soil samples and water samples. There will be class action lawsuits from this. There will be. Start doing your homework now.
As happens with these disasters, everything is now kind of all over the place. We move past the fog of war stage on it, and now it's just this crazy free-for-all land where there's this narrative spinning off in 1,000 different directions, and it's very hard to keep up with what's important, what needs to be talked about. And there are a lot of different ways that we could go with this report at this point. I mean, we could spend a long time just digging into the fact that on record, FEMA was never created first and foremost to be a disaster response agency. And most people in the public don't even know this, but it was actually created to be a continuity of government agency. The forerunner of FEMA was the Federal Civil Defense Administration. And I found this old report from Wired back in 2017 that talked about how when FEMA was created in 1979, it actually brought together more than 100 programs from across other areas of government. And although it's publicly the agency that's known for coordinating the government's response to natural disasters, few people in the public understand that much of FEMA's resources go to its primary mission, which is not the public response to natural disasters, but is in fact coordinating the nation's post-apocalypse efforts, and that the majority of FEMA's funding and a third of its workforce is actually hidden in the nation's classified black budget.
Our times are perilous, almost unthinkably so. And it is for that very reason that we must think about it and do something about it, too.
So the real focus of FEMA and its real budget is actually only known to about 20 members of Congress. And the cornerstone of FEMA's world, according to this article, is actually in a deep underground bunker in Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains called Mount Weather, where continuity of government is supposed to be taking place. And of course, if watching FEMA fail again and again and again for the umpteenth time and its disaster response on the ground is any indication, the government should probably be pretty concerned that this is the same agency that's in charge of its continuity if nuclear Armageddon or a meteor strikes or something. We could also spend this entire report discussing something we've covered extensively in the past, which was brought up again with President Biden's recent claims that the government doesn't control the weather.
Now the claims are getting even more bizarre. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, a congresswoman from Georgia, is now saying the federal government is literally controlling the weather. We're controlling the weather. It's beyond ridiculous. It's got to stop.
This is a ridiculous claim on its face, and it's so easily disprovable, not just by a montage of people openly discussing it for decades now.
The foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather, and he who controls the weather will control the world.
The Air Force has gotten great value out of HAARP in the past. We took over from the Navy and managed it and actually did a number of experiment campaigns up there and have finished our work that we're interested in doing up there. We've moving on to other ways of managing the ionosphere, which the HAARP was really designed to do, was to inject energy into the ionosphere to be able to actually control it.
Another example is the array of technologies, often referred to collectively as geoengineering, that potentially could help reverse the warming effects of global climate change. One that has gained my personal attention is stratospheric aerosol injection.
Well, instead of doing a rain dance, we physicists are firing trillion-watt lasers into the sky to actually precipitate rain clouds and actually bring down lightning bolts.
Or declassified documents that talk about it, but simply by our nation's own laws, such as Public Law 94-490, otherwise known as the National Weather Modification Policy Act of 1976, which was passed October 13th of that year. The stated purpose of which, in part, is literally, quote, to develop practical methods and devices for weather modification. I mean, that's a law that was passed in this country. It was a program. I'm not even sure why we have to continue arguing about this at this point in 2024. It's not a theory. This isn't a crazy, kooky theory. It's a fact. It's on record. Perhaps Biden made such a provocative, contentious claim publicly just to take the focus away, even if briefly, from the growing tide of discontent happening with his administration's disaster response on the actual ground in the wake of this hurricane.
It's beyond ridiculous. It's got to stop.
By means of cloud seeding, atmospheric scientists are trying to find out if rain can be brought on prematurely in the clouds of a threatening thunderstorm. If it can, it might also be possible to reduce the destructive lightning discharges at the height of the storm. Records are kept of the frequency and types of lightning strokes, of seeded and unseeded storms. Statistical analysis will tell if any significant modification has taken place.
That was a big one.
Investigating the detailed nature of such processes is the prelude to the possible control of some of the harmful aspects of the weather.
We're at this point in American history where trust in major institutions has fallen to all-time lows. And in an environment that's so shrouded in secrecy, this need-to-know basis we've all been living under since at least World War II, where transparency is nowhere to be found everywhere you look, speculation absolutely will proliferate. In that kind of environment, people are more likely to believe even fantastical conspiracies and just total blatant outright crazy lies over anything that's coming out of the institutions that have lost their trust. And really, those institutions only have themselves to blame for that lost trust. That's why transparency is important, and we don't have that. We don't have it anywhere. And one of the now widely debunked conspiracy theories that came out surrounds lithium mines in the area and charges that this whole situation will be a land grab for that.
We don't bill homeowners. We don't bill the local municipalities. We don't bill the state. We don't bill FEMA. And as a result, nobody gets to tell us what to do because I don't receive money from any of those people. And that's very specific because I don't want to be under anybody's thumb. One area, Little Germany, where we have been working, a community that's been cut off with 70 homes and is now down to 40 people.
With no electricity, no cell service, and roads washed away in Washington County's Little Germany this past week, radio communication has been used to contact those still living in the small community.
That community has been intentionally cut off by the local government. Why? Because there's lithium underneath of the mountain they live on. But I digress.
Check out the Facebook post from this woman who says Asheville sits on top of billions of dollars of lithium, so she believes the disaster there was man-made through what she calls geoengineering. And first of all, that's not possible. No one has ever created a hurricane before. And secondly, this rumor about the government trying to seize lithium, it's come up before after other disasters like the wildfires in Hawaii. The rumor was wrong then, and it's wrong now. Mining data shows North Carolina has no active lithium mines.
And multiple mainstream fact checkers were really quick to jump all over that and point out the places where the mining of lithium is set to start soon are located far east of where the worst of this flooding took place. So the whole concern for everything just got written off and tossed in the dumpster of semantic arguments, which oftentimes happens. There'll be a fantastic claim and there'll be one part of it that gets picked apart and the whole rest of it will just get thrown in the garbage and never spoken about again. But it was actually looking into these claims that we found something that it doesn't really just affect North Carolina, but it actually does affect the entire country. And if you live here in America, it is no doubt coming soon to somewhere near you. And we both thought it would be important to have this conversation.
Beginning in August 2024, the month before Hurricane Helene would devastate parts of western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee,
Over the next year, you might notice what looks like a low-flying plane on a lollipop stick flying back and forth. A federal geological survey over the Carolinas begins this month. The survey will locate rare earth minerals and help public health officials monitor deadly toxins. That lollipop on a stick is a passive sensor, according to USGS physicist Angie Shaw. She's overseeing an initiative to map critical mineral resources, including those that help power electric vehicles like cobalt and lithium in the Carolinas and Virginia. She said the data will provide a rough sketch of what lies miles beneath our feet.
Industry might say, oh, there's something there. Maybe I'll explore this area in more detail.
The plane will fly over the region for a year. Then researchers will analyze that data for another year before making it public.
An unprecedented geological survey project was initiated, taking place above the state via helicopter and covering broad regions of North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia, all scheduled to continue over the course of the next year in an area chosen both due to its known and suspected mineral occurrences.
They're using low-level planes to collect high-resolution data that will show our geological framework.
This new geophysical survey is a better understanding of the deep geologic underpinnings.
That includes info on underground minerals, natural gas deposits, fault lines, and environmental hazards.
It will also help map subsurface geology, where some rocks could be located hundreds and thousands of meters below the surface, more than 3,280 feet, based on their magnetic signature.
You may see some low-flying planes over the next several weeks, and that's because the United States Geological Survey plans to do the low-level flying to survey the state of South Carolina. USGS scientists will use the images above and below ground to better understand geology and natural resources in the state.
As unprecedented things are happening there in North Carolina and the surrounding area, this article admits the survey was chosen due to both its known and suspected mineral occurrences. They are searching out these minerals as we speak.
Well, geologists are known for their groundbreaking research, and recent efforts include locating critical earth mineral deposits, and that research is happening right now here in Siouxland.
Geologists from Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Minnesota have embarked on a geological survey of the Spirit Lake tectonic zone that is buried, and they are collecting their data with the use of low-flying airplanes.
And this survey is just one piece of the nationwide Earth Remapping Resource Initiative, also known as the Earth MRI, which is a response to an executive order from former President Donald Trump back in 2017. It amounts to a historic resurvey and remapping of the American continent that, based on this new paradigm, may fundamentally change the picture of the landscape in ways that haven't significantly changed in decades, maybe even centuries.
There's this huge funding from the government that they're trying to allocate to the best way possible to understand the geology of the entire country. And this has been selected as one of those focus areas because there's potential for critical minerals in this area.
I say that because wherever they find these minerals, everything in that area is going to drastically change. It may or may not respect current population zones as they search for these rare minerals that they claim they have to have. So with this new technology, they're able to look more than 3,000 feet below the ground to discover untapped sources of rare earth minerals in ways that weren't possible in the 20th century. 3D models and maps are important for improving our understanding of critical mineral and geothermal resource potential, as well as water resources and groundwater pathways near legacy mining areas.
When integrated with other data sets, it can reveal the location of potential mineral formations and map groundwater resources that can support communities, industries, and the environment.
Both methods map out geology underneath trees and vegetation, Shaw said. This is a way of passively seeing under the skin of the earth. By mapping out the faults, folds, and tectonic history surrounding a known lithium deposit, like that in Kings Mountain, North Carolina, scientists can learn more about the geologic context of the lithium. That can help geologists better understand perhaps where lithium is likely to occur. So you can find this stuff on the USGS.gov site. There are similar flights doing this imaging of the geology. It's been funded by the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and they're basically aggressively mapping mineral deposits all over, for sure in New Mexico, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Wyoming's Laramie Mountains, Sioux Falls region of South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Montana, Idaho, Alaska, and in an earlier phase in Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Arkansas, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Colorado, New York, and I'm sure in time, if they haven't already covered the rest of the places, there's a good chance they will. They're looking for this stuff essentially everywhere that it might be.
Some people in South Central Pennsylvania may soon notice a low-flying helicopter or airplane in the sky. These flights are all part of a new survey by the U.S. Geological Survey.
The massive survey marks an unprecedented change for our nation at large. Changes that North Carolina is now ground zero for, as the age of lithium is now upon us. An age of global reliance on relatively tiny amounts of rare earth element minerals. In fact, 2024 was promoted as the potential year for lithium.
Have more time for fun and pleasure. Family moments you will treasure. It's an opportunity to live better electrically.
Electric vehicles, cell phones, laptops, e-bikes, and other green energy technologies, including solar panels, and more, all of this is part of a global economy reliant upon rare earth minerals, most notably lithium, but also a couple dozen others. And in turn, American interest and so-called energy security are moving desperately to maneuver and source these essential minerals for the digital age, which are, at the present time, heavily dominated by China. That point's been talked up a lot. The race for rare earth minerals has been placed into a new Cold War 2.0 context. The narrative all over the West is that China is poised to be the new world superpower by 2050 without another war or firing a single shot, but simply by dominating the world's rare earth minerals market.
Rare earths could be the key to a transition to green energy. The rock from these mines are turned into building blocks for magnets. They're used in everything from iPhones to Teslas, and Beijing has a dominating hand over them. Last month, China imposed export controls on gallium and germanium, stoking fears that it could block exports of rare earths next. So, what would happen then?
They're sitting on $10 to $12 trillion of critical minerals in Ukraine. They could be the richest country in all of Europe. I don't want to give that money and those assets to Putin to share with China. If we help Ukraine now, they can become the best business partner we ever dreamed of. That $10 to $12 trillion of critical mineral assets could be used by Ukraine and the West, not given to Putin and China. This is a very big deal how Ukraine ends. Mm-hmm. Let's help them win a war we can't afford to lose. Let's find a solution to this war. But they're sitting on a gold mine to give Putin $10 or $12 trillion of critical minerals that he will share with China is ridiculous.
So the West, including the EU and U.S., are in a mad rush to find their own sources of this mineral and stop the reliance upon China. That's the way this lithium-based green energy transition has been framed. In 2019, Reuters reported that China supplied 80% of the rare earths imported by the United States between 2014 and 2017. And this article was cited by Eric Schmidt in his National Security Report on AI. This is part of everything they're working towards. This is a national security plan that involves the technology. It's in response to this idea that China is controlling the supply of these rare earth minerals. Piedmont CEO Keith Phillips noted that in just 2022 alone, $33 billion has been announced for electric vehicle battery manufacturing plants in the United States, which would require 500,000 metric tons of lithium annually, an amount, he told CNBC, that is more than all the lithium hydroxide produced in the world currently. So clearly, the industry is facing a critical resource shortage.
The need is we are going to need exponentially greater numbers of critical minerals than we use today. Just to give you a couple of examples, 42 times the amount of lithium that we use today we will need by 2050, 25 times the amount of manganese. The numbers are staggering. That's the need. The vulnerability is that right now, two-thirds or even more of these minerals are owned, controlled, mined, or processed by one country, the PRC.
Thus, in the last few years, these vital rare earth elements have become really important in the national security imperative for the U.S. and its allies. Since June 2022, the formation of the Minerals Security Partnership, a coalition between 14 nations, Australia, Canada, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, India, Italy, Japan, Norway, Republic of Korea, Sweden, the United Kingdom, the United States, the European Union, they're all in partnership with representatives of BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Rio Tinto, and Anglo American, who strategize, quote, breaking China's chokehold over rare earth minerals that are non-negotiable for the high-tech sector. DARPA and several branches of the federal government are focused on these rare earth minerals, the critical linchpin of the clean energy future. In 2023, the Department of Energy declared 18 critical minerals as the, quote, electric 18.
Critical because of the risk for supply chain disruptions due to any number of reasons, from political, regulatory, and social factors to basic availability.
Three rare earth elements, neodymium, dysprosium, and praseodymium, all just household names, all of them, are some of the most vulnerable critical minerals to supply chain disruptions. High-performance magnets require rare earths for fabrication, and these magnets are used in a litany of clean energy technologies, wind turbines, electric vehicles, solar panels, next-generation electric batteries, and efficient lighting systems. What a plan for efficiency, basing it on minerals that they don't know where to find. This is what's happening. And the United States has only one active mine and processing site for these rare earths. I guess depending on what you read, there's a little bit of conflicting information. But they're referring to Mountain Pass, California, whereas China, once again, is responsible for the most processing and refining of rare earth elements globally. In an executive order on America's supply chain signed by Biden last year, a review was ordered in the vulnerabilities of our critical mineral and material supply chains. In June, the Biden-Harris administration released a first-of-its-kind supply chain assessment that found our over-reliance on foreign sources and adversarial nations for critical minerals and materials posed a national and economic security threat. So it is interesting that in a bipartisan way, they're changing tack. I mean, I don't really know why it ever made sense for the U.S. to be so dependent on foreign sources of anything. Food, minerals, raw materials, but especially from a potentially hostile nation, rival superpower. Why did it ever make sense to be reliant upon someone else for a country so large and so full of potential? I mean, everyone has the same question in their mind. The review and other related reports have zeroed in on lithium for electric batteries, one of the most reoccurring aspects of this. A June 2021 report referred to innovations essential to military preparedness, like highly specialized lithium-ion batteries that require an ecosystem of innovation skills and production facilities that the United States currently lacks. And this, again, is the United States has only one active mining and processing site for rare earths located in Mountain Pass, California. This is all about to change, and drastically.
Electric economy plan worked out just as he predicted.
Billions of dollars are now being funneled into transforming America for the new green future. In the past couple of years, while everyone's been distracted with COVID, inflation, the election, there's been this mad dash to locate rare earth minerals for potential mines all over this country.
The state of Alabama will soon be an even bigger part of the automaking industry thanks to a rare earth mineral found deep in east central Alabama,
which North Carolina in particular is at the center of, and we're going to go into detail on that in a moment. But this is happening all over this entire nation right now, in practically every state.
We're seeing a renaissance throughout the whole country, says Virginia McLemore, an economic geologist at the New Mexico Bureau of Geology and Mineral Resources.
In the places where mining and processing of minerals itself isn't happening, you have EV battery manufacturing or recycling facilities that are popping up everywhere.
Michigan, long the automotive manufacturing capital of the United States, is now getting pumped with investment both publicly and privately to build out a series of battery manufacturing plants that will power the wave of electric vehicles coming to market.
In 2022, Vice reported on the U.S. Department of Energy investing millions of dollars into transforming America's Rust Belt into the Lithium Belt, which is an area that covers the majority of the Appalachian Basin. As part of the Battery Materials Processing and Battery Manufacturing and Recycling Program, the DOE is enabling $16 billion in investment to bolster domestic EV battery supply chains, including manufacturing, processing, and recycling. In September 2024, they just announced another $3 billion in investments, and there are projects all over the country for this, including expanding commercial-scale facilities to extract lithium, graphite, and other battery materials, and for battery component manufacturing. And there's a map they have on their website that shows where all these projects are all over the country. And there are so many opening up in South Carolina right now, just by the way, that you can barely see the state on the map.
Deep inside a northern Nevada volcano, deposits of what some are calling white gold or the new oil, there is plenty of lithium. And it's a vital part of flipping the switch towards more earth-friendly battery power technology.
Called white gold. That's because it's solid and it's white and it's silvery and because of its potential economic value.
This surge to exploit deposits for mining across the U.S. is basically like the new gold rush of the 1800s, except for lithium and other rare earth minerals. And it's coming with great controversy. These locations are rapidly being put into operation, and it doesn't really matter if it bumps up against local community concerns for pollution or the tainting of groundwater or other environmental problems or not.
Panasonic officials say they're still on track to open up the state's first EV plant early next year.
General Motors and Samsung tonight are creating a $3 billion EV battery plant in New Carlisle, Indiana.
GM has announced a new plan to build an electric vehicle battery factory in Lansing. This would be their third such factory in the United States.
A planned $5.5 billion electric vehicle plant near Savannah is getting a presidential seal of approval. But it appears that a huge electric vehicle battery plant being built in Florence County is going to get even huger. Another electric vehicle battery plant. How do you doing?
I just want to emphasize that we couldn't even count how many new mining sites are being opened up in the near future to dig for these minerals because it's just that many. And in other cases, they're actually reopening or repurposing old mines, along with many processing facilities that were used in the production of nuclear and hydrogen bombs. Many of these same elements are actually involved, including the frequent interaction between lithium and forms of fluoride, many of which are outright poisonous or have proven to be detrimental to the environment. Just last month, it was reported that Hyundai's $7.6 billion EV plant in Georgia, which has been backed at every level of government, including the Republican governor, including officials in the Biden administration through the tax credits, was being protested by farmers and other residents who say that the 4 million gallons of water a day that this plant expects to use could drain the local aquifer and worsen the region's flooding. Not only do we not want to buy the product that's being made, said Amanda Wilson, a local anti-development activist, about the electric vehicles being produced there, but it's forcing us out of the way that we live. The Savannah fight shows how clean energy projects supported by the climate law are reshaping communities and ironically facing backlash for potential harm to the environment. And it's just kind of ironic because we've been lectured at for years about conservation, water conservation, how much drought is going on. And so the answer is to build plants that literally require millions of gallons of water a day. And people are protesting this. So it isn't just the impacts of the mining itself, but concerns regarding how much water these processes are going to require from already depleted water resources and what will happen to the quality of water in the nearby areas. And we're not just talking about the concerns over potentially tainting the groundwater, but Concerns over the threat of salinizing freshwater sources, which could just make the water there undrinkable. I mean, there are some real issues around this. And North Carolina itself is a special case in this new gold rush for America's supply of lithium.
On today's episode, where will EV lithium come from? In the future, North Carolina.
This North Carolina lake sits on top of one of the largest hard rock lithium deposits in the U.S.
Kings Mountain we believe to be a top tier, top quartile resource capable of supplying at least a million, if not more, electric vehicles with its feedstock.
That mine, currently covered in 150 feet of water, was previously open from the late 1930s until the 1980s, when mining in Chile was seen as more cost effective.
When we are done, it'll look very similar to what it looked like before. There will be trucks and shovels. There will be a limited amount of blasting, and it will be a conventional hard rock mining operation.
At Kings Mountain, hard rock will be broken, crushed, and turned into a concentrate resembling sand.
We need to get the green stuff out, and that will produce what's called a spodumene concentrate.
That concentrate will be transported to Albemarle's soon-to-be-built $1.3 billion processing facility in South Carolina.
A new lithium mine could be coming to Gaston County. Piedmont Lithium announced today, years after the company applied, the state has approved its mining permit.
The North Carolina area lithium being discovered back in the 1950s when this was used to make atomic bombs.
The companies producing the lithium compound for the government are believed to be on five-year contracts, most of which expire in the coming year. But industry officials appear confident that the Atomic Energy Commission will not cut orders so drastically that the economic health of the producers would be seriously affected. The metal, they feel, is too vital to national defense to allow its producers to suffer.
And interestingly, I came across this 1958 article in the Winston-Salem Sentinel about how during the International Geophysical Year, they put out a report that over Antarctica, they were finding the glow of lithium atoms in the upper atmosphere. Scientists were suggesting the atoms got there from explosions of hydrogen bombs, and they were able to then trace the lithium back to the mines in North Carolina. And at the time, they didn't know lithium was being used in these bombs when this report came out. But they were able to figure it out and figure out where it came from because it was one of the only places they were mining lithium at the time.
Think about this like a big chunk of chocolate chip cookie dough. We're after those chocolate chips, which is the spodumene. And when we pull those chocolate chips out, those chocolate chips will eventually be sent to the Megaflex. And that's where they're going to extract cocoa, which is the lithium.
So Charlotte, North Carolina-based Albemarle has been working on restarting an old lithium mine in Kings Mountain to be operational sometime between next year and 2030, with plans to build a lithium processing plant in the area. In September of 2023, it was announced the DOD entered a $90 million agreement with Albemarle to reopen the dormant Kings Mountain lithium mine using funds appropriated from the Inflation Reduction Act. And then in August of 2024, BlackRock, Inc., who you'll recall is part of the Mineral Security Partnership, spent some $200 million to purchase an additional 2 million plus shares of Albemarle, bringing BlackRock's total holdings in the company to over 12 million shares. On the other hand, you have Piedmont Lithium, which is the supplier of Tesla, announcing in April 2024 that the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality had approved the company's mining permit for its Gaston County project in Belmont for the construction, operation, and reclamation of the proposed Carolina Lithium project. And Piedmont's president and CEO, Keith Phillips, said, "We plan to develop Carolina Lithium as one of the lowest cost, most sustainable lithium hydroxide operations in the world and a critical part of American electric vehicle supply chain. The project is expected to contribute billions of dollars of economic output and several hundred jobs to Gaston County and North Carolina's growing electrification economy." Piedmont has chosen nearby Etowah in eastern Tennessee as the location of what is currently expected to be the largest lithium hydroxide processing plant in the U.S.
Tennessee will soon have the largest lithium processing plant in North America. Piedmont Lithium is building a facility near Chattanooga to support the growing domestic industry of electric vehicles.
Mid-North Carolina is poised to become the nexus point, not only for lithium mining, but also for lithium processing sites, as well as EV battery manufacturers and electric vehicle production plants that are rapidly popping up in many parts of North Carolina and nearby eastern Tennessee and in parts of South Carolina and parts of Georgia. And these production facilities are trying to form a completely integrated head-to-toe operation. We plan to develop Carolina Lithium as one of the lowest-cost, most sustainable lithium hydroxide operations in the world and as a critical part of the American electric vehicle supply chain. Carolina Lithium is a highly strategic project located within both the renowned Carolina 10 spodumene belt and the U.S. battery belt. The project is being designed as a fully integrated mining, spodumene concentrate, and lithium hydroxide manufacturing operation. There are currently no such integrated sites operating anywhere in the world, and the economic and environmental advantages of this strategy are compelling.
And that's all before you get to tiny Spruce Pine, North Carolina, a town that's home to the entire world's main source of high-purity quartz that's needed for semiconductors. With facilities that supply between an estimated 70 to 90% of the mined and processed high-purity quartz used in the entire industry. This one little town, which just got wiped out by the hurricane, although the mines are okay, is so central for not only its quartz, but the proprietary refining processes that the Belgian company that mines this quartz uses, that the Daily Mail ran with the headline that Spruce Pine will help fuel the entire world's AI revolution and power an entire $530 billion semiconductor global industry. So the properties of the minerals in North Carolina are quite unique to the whole world. But right now, we have the government using new technology to help discover new mineral deposits, not just there, but in states all over this country. More lithium was just discovered in a massive formation that covers parts of Louisiana, Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, and it's being reported that that might contain enough lithium to power 50 million electric vehicles. And you have chemical plants in Louisiana that are already being converted into EV battery manufacturing plants as we speak. And speaking of Florida, scientists are also saying that Florida phosphates are significant sources of rare earth elements, noting that the state could, quote, satisfy nearly 50% of the U.S. demand for many of the critical rare earth elements. Wyoming, they just said, they found 2.3 billion metric tons of rare earth minerals there in the southeastern part of the state. In Idaho, the first and only cobalt mine in decades is opening right now. In Nebraska, they just discovered there might be the second largest rare earth mineral deposit.
This will be the second largest rare earth resource in the United States.
The company that wants to dig a mine in southeast Nebraska says resources under this ground could help in the renewable energy revolution.
A latest survey published today shows a huge deposit of rare earth material, among other critical metals, south of Tecumseh.
NioCorp says that this could be the discovery that gets the mine a green light.
All of these say it's the largest or the second largest. They're discovering everything all the time, and so everything that they discover, they're like, no, this is the largest. No, that's the largest. Southern California's Imperial Valley right now is currently being transformed into Lithium Valley. So this is basically everywhere, is what I'm saying. The new paradigm is spreading to every corner of this country while everyone has been paying attention to everything else. Like, this is what's actually going on. I think the only state I couldn't find anything in right now so far is Wisconsin. That's just for right now. That doesn't mean anything about the future. They also found a $1.5 billion lithium deposit in western Maine a few years ago, which they claim had some of the largest lithium-bearing crystals that have ever been found.
The magnitude of this is really something new. It's estimated to be worth roughly $1.5 billion. But what makes it really unique, I think, is the richness of the lithium in these particular crystals. It is the richest known lithium deposit in the world. It contains about 11 million tons of ore.
But under Maine's recently enacted mining laws, it's unclear if this can be extracted. However, it was reported that this particular type of mining is so extremely rare that there isn't an area of the rule in Maine that specifically explains this kind of work. And that's the thing. Many, many laws in this country, not just mining laws, but water laws, don't cover certain facets of these types of mining and processes because a lot of them are so new to the country. And the thing is while a lot of people have been championing this green transition that's being touted as so much better for our environment as a whole, not that many of those same exact people actually want any of these mining operations or processes or battery facilities in their own backyards.
This is a small community in a rural area. A lot of folks really do not want that to change. They moved here to kind of get that country lifestyle. They don't want to have a big factory in their backyard.
So we're kind of stuck in this paradox now of how willing will Americans be to accept the dirty side of clean energy.
And not everyone agrees that expansion of mining is the best way forward for a sustainable future.
Suffice to say that the techniques, which are different for each obscure mineral, which could be found in a deposit with many different rare earth minerals, are complicated and controversial. And certainly in the case of fracking, which is sometimes used for this purpose, hypocritical under the banner of environmental moralism. And Columbia's Climate School has written about the paradox of lithium, an essential element to power the clean energy transition, can have negative impacts on the environment. And one sentence in particular stands out from that. They said, "We must not fall into the same traps from which we are trying to free ourselves."
Producers are also facing environmental pushback.
"I simply feel this bad feeling in my stomach. This is progress. This is the future. Really? Pouring concrete over nature, while we know how polluting the factory is going to be. Is this the green future? For who? I'm sure not for us."
So you have protests now that have been going on against lithium mining all over the world. In Chile,
a protest by several hundred people in northern Chile on Wednesday blocked access to the Atacama Salt Flat, the world's largest lithium deposit, where domestic producer SQM and U.S. firm Albemarle extract the metal.
Serbia, where they recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the German government and the EU.
In Serbia in December 2021, we saw a lot of protests and thousands of protesters in Belgrade blocking bridges to protest Rio Tinto's plans to invest over $2 billion there for lithium production.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz paid a surprise visit to Belgrade a few weeks ago to sign a major lithium mining deal with Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić in a bid to reduce the EU's dependency on China. Germany has ambitions to build 15 million electric vehicles by 2030 to keep its automobile industry afloat, which the German economy is largely dependent upon. But widespread protests are planned across Serbia this weekend, with more than half of the Serbian population rejecting plans to mine in the Jadar Valley. These plans are not only controversial due to the environmental cost of mining, but also because of the politics. So it seems that the EU just wants to keep the dirty work outside of its own backyard.
In Portugal,
she points to where the mine's perimeter would be.
"I worry about the destruction it could cause and it ruining our lives. We are here in a little corner of the world that they're going to damage."
Opposition to the mine runs strong. Signs against it, like this one, are found across the community. That's despite the promise of jobs.
"Most of the fields we rely on are in the perimeter of the proposed mine. It is not green, it is not sustainable, it is not going to benefit us. And it is going to destroy one more region, rich in water and pure air."
The mine could stretch over more than 500 hectares, which could spoil the landscape of a village listed as World Agricultural Heritage.
And there have been a lot of protests happening here as well, mostly by Native American groups in states like Arizona and Nevada, who don't want to see their sacred sites and their water resources tainted or destroyed.
From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. The fight over Thacker Pass, a lithium-rich area in northern Nevada, has been raging for months. The state and Lithium America, the company that would be the prime mine investor, say the mine could operate without hurting the environment or people. The state approved licensing in February of 2022, But the people of the Paiute, Shoshone, and Washoe tribes have been protesting because of the area's spiritual and historical significance. Those opposed to the mine have argued the approval was fast-tracked without a complete environmental review.
In June 2024, it was just reported that Utah had to stop its lithium mining project, ironically called the Paradox Lithium Project, situated along the Green River near Moab in the Four Corners area, after a coalition of environmental groups successfully petitioned the state to reconsider its application. Because the wells that they need to use here would require the company to drill through a Cold War-era uranium mill that had contaminated the groundwater beneath it. So they would literally have to drill through a radioactive aquifer. Environmental groups are concerned that radioactive water is going to seep into the Colorado River. And you have Kyle Roerink, who's the executive director of the Green Basin Water Network, calling Utah's water laws outdated and inadequate when it comes to these relatively new large-scale lithium projects, stating that current Utah water statutes did not foresee these types of applications.
Our laws haven't caught up with the reality of what's happening to our planet.
And that's what I was talking about earlier. A lot of our laws are not brought up to standard when it comes to some of these projects. Meanwhile, you have a new lithium company called Waterleaf Resources, which is a subsidiary out of California's Lilac Solutions, that wants to siphon 73 billion gallons of water, enough to support 500,000 households, out of the already depleted Great Salt Lake to extract lithium, with promises that it's going to put all the water back after they've taken the lithium out, supposedly using an experimental new process that won't taint that water. The company's application has already been protested by people who are wondering why a private business should be allowed to use so much water from the lake when farmers and cities have had to make such significant cuts to save that water. You have companies exploring an area near the Montana-Idaho border with the potential for a multi-billion dollar operation at a mine near Sheep Creek and the headwaters of the West Fork of the Bitterroot River. But the residents of that valley are extremely concerned. The environment is going to be destroyed and their way of life. And you've got a lead scientist and general manager of MPG Ranch quoted here. He's the head of a biological research station. And he's quoted in here saying, the more you look at this project, the crazier it seems. If it were up to me, we wouldn't issue these guys a fishing permit, much less a mining permit. And then down here, they've quoted the Northwest Program Director at Earthworks, Bonnie Geestring. She says, I do think it's really important to talk about how difficult it is to predict water quality impacts, even today, with modern mining. They commissioned a study of 12 major operating mines in Montana that all began after the implementation of modern federal and state mining regulations back in the 80s. And they found 90% of those mines resulted in water quality impacts that were not predicted when those mines were permitted, when they were given their permit. They talk about how hard it is, how very difficult it is to stop a mine. And almost the only way to do it is if they go bankrupt or if you can get congressional support. Nonetheless, it says those gathered made clear that many residents fear how the mine may harm the local economy, the community, and their way of life. And I swear, you could just take that line and you could transplant it to any of these stories the world over, because that's what everybody's concerned about, and they're concerned about it everywhere. And I'm telling you, look in your own backyard, because this is not just in these rare areas, and it's not just in places where Native Americans are complaining. This is coming soon to an area near you. I don't think people realize how pervasive this is about to be. Despite breaking a treaty with the Oglala Sioux tribe, uranium mines have popped up all over the Black Hills in South Dakota, and they're threatening a water aquifer and reservoir right now that also provides drinking water to Rapid City and Ellsworth Air Force Base. So that's already going on, but the Black Hills is another location that's now being proposed for new lithium and rare earth mines. And at least they've said they're going to clarify part of one mining law, part of one they've been using to justify these things. For example, the 1872 mining law that they've been using, which conveys the same rights established through a valid mining claim to adjacent land for the disposal of waste from that mining project. Like, that's a thing. So now they're at least saying The Department of Interior said we need to obviously take steps to clarify that for the 21st century. Kind of ridiculous. We're using 1870s laws for this. But you have Native American groups all over the map, all over Arizona and Nevada and New Mexico, who are fighting back against these things because some of them are taking place on the sites where multiple massacres by government agents occurred. They are taking place on ancient sacred sites where ceremonies are performed and those sites are being used by Native tribes.
But it's also a gathering and a ceremonial use area because it has our traditional medicines, traditional foods. The obsidian is there that we collect, obviously. So it's just a special place, a sacred area. And Lithium Americas had found that there's lithium minerals there, and now they want to dig it up and mine it out of there for the green rush that's going on in the world.
And they're also taking place on areas that have endangered species that only grow, like in the Thacker Pass, Nevada situation that's going on, there's an endangered species of wildflower that literally can only be found there and nowhere else on Earth, right? And some of you might say, well, who cares? Some of you probably don't care who are listening to this right now. But don't you think it's a little ham-fisted and a little bullshit that we've been fed this line our entire lives about how the green, you know, energy transition is so important for the environment? They care so much about the freaking environment. They're going to tell you what kind of car you can drive and where you can drive it and who can even afford it and where that's going to be. And everything's got to be spelled out by some Agenda 21 narrative. But when it comes right down to it, and there's literally an endangered species of plant that grows nowhere else on Earth, if they want to mine that area for minerals and completely wipe that out, they don't give a crap. They do not care, okay? They don't care. So it's the idea that this is about being green or caring about the environment is one of the biggest jokes I think I've maybe ever seen ever told about anything ever, okay? Because we have endangered species acts. We have all kinds of stuff that's been put into place. I mean, the whole precedent for the government owning parklands and all this other stuff is because they're supposed to be protecting and conserving that, right? That's for conservation. But when it comes right down to it, if they decide it's a Cold War 2.0, we got to beat China, which is a phony narrative anyway, and I'm about to tell you why later on in this report, then they'll do whatever. And they don't give a crap about the environment or endangered species or any of that propaganda they've been shoving down everyone else's throats for decades now about what this green future is supposed to be. It's all BS, because when it comes down to it, they will rip that ground open and take whatever the hell they want. And they really don't care. They don't care about any of this. We got to have arguments about, you know, Indigenous Peoples Day and all that other stuff. They don't care. That's like talking out both sides of your mouth because you're a two-faced liar. All right. That is all that is. It's some PR show. It has nothing to do with the actual reality on the actual ground.
They say what will become the largest federally approved lithium mining project operating in the U.S. comes at an environmental cost.
The whole issue of electric vehicles and lithium mining is tricking us into believing that we can have this modern industrial lifestyle that we all enjoy and also solve global warming.
It's not going to solve any climate change problem, but it's a major contribution.
This facility will help us increase the supply of U.S.-based lithium resources to fuel the clean energy revolution.
We're sitting on a gold mine, literally.
I think we're a silent majority. I think a lot of people are afraid to say anything about it because they are bringing a lot to the town as far as money.
And it's also been going on in North Carolina. In the last few years, you have North Carolinians who have been protesting the reopening of these lithium mines and lithium mining in general in their area.
Cries of "not in my backyard" echoing through Gaston County tonight. Dozens of residents are speaking out to county commissioners against a proposed lithium mine moving into the area.
Dressed in red as a sign to stop.
These protesters hoping to put a halt to the proposed lithium mine in Gaston County.
People don't want to live near mines.
The concerns include potential water contamination, dust and noise, all things no one wants in the place they call home.
They are willing to destroy people's lives, homes, and one of the most beautiful, peaceful areas in Gaston County for rechargeable batteries.
Piedmont Lithium's proposal would risk contaminating water sources for thousands throughout Gaston County.
It's a waste to our town. I do not want the destruction.
When they first started this, they said they're going to put a solar farm right here.
Oh.
And that would power the whole thing. Well, I did a little bit of research on that. That wouldn't have gotten the first machine running.
But a lot of the people out here, they're poor. They don't know how to push. These are the people who have been pushed around all their lives. Giant corporations have pushed them around. Here's a corporation pushing them around.
Gaston County was actually chosen for this project because it's actually an area that is very rich in lithium.
I just moved here 2 years ago, and so we kind of wanted to do the whole, you know, like organic grazing and homestead.
Not even like a mile, right? It's like right across the street, and it's like maybe, what, 200 feet? If you look at the diagram that they have, then you can see the property line, and that's where it is.
And all our lives, all our entire lives, we've been getting told about how we got to save the earth, we got to do what's right for the environment, we got to fight global warming, we got to fight climate change, blah, 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 on and on and on. But when it comes right down to it, I'm not so sure that's at all what's going on here in any way. But they just keep repeating the mantra jobs.
Neighbors are raising concerns.
Yeah, they're worried about possible environmental impacts while the company touts the economic benefits.
It's like the dog whistle of the day. Jobs, 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 jobs.
The plant has the support of the governor of Michigan, who says it'll bring jobs.
Creating high-paying jobs.
24 high-paying jobs.
And it's going to bring hundreds of jobs.
Thousands of jobs. Hundreds of jobs.
More jobs.
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 Marsha, Marsha, Marsha!
One reporter even had an attitude about it. He was like, what, they're getting jobs?
Ford battery plant is heading to the city of Marshall, Michigan, thanks in part to funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. And while the plant is expected to bring tens of thousands of jobs and economic activity to the region, not everyone seems to be happy about its arrival.
The objections to the plant, we just saw several billboards indicating that there are people who object to it, are what, environmental or the fact that it's going to overwhelm the small town with traffic? What?
But these jobs aren't permanent. These jobs are temporary.
And they will provide jobs for a period of time. They've even said it, I believe, 10 to 12 years, maybe 15 at the most, lifespan for the project.
And by the way, in some of these cases, when they're telling people these jobs are going to pay a lot, that's a moving goalpost too.
The price of the jobs has gone from $60,000 a year to 40, to when we interviewed him, it was more like $24 an hour, and that was what the Chinese nationals averaged in. So it's really about $18 an hour. They are not high-paying jobs. We have not gotten the truth from anything that they've said hasn't been truthful. So, and we don't need jobs. We literally have help wanted all over our whole community.
For the life of the project, however long that is, if you don't get a factory in your backyard that's being staffed by foreign workers, which is a thing that's also been happening.
The livelihood in many cases is many farms, and you know, this mine will take that away from them.
You know, it hasn't been temporary for a lot of these generational people that have been living on this land for all their life, and their father was all his life, and the grandfather was all his life, going back generations, farming and the other things that people have been doing in these areas.
They'll leave with billions, and then the jobs will be gone. And maybe the farms will be gone.
And even though these mines have barely gotten off the ground yet, there's already been concerns nearby about pollution.
Neighbors in Kings Mountain want to know why a chemical smell is filling the air and what's seeping into their waterways.
Like a milky dishwater.
It seems soapy.
Every morning, Brandy Arnold runs about 6 miles at Kings Mountain Gateway Trail. And for the first time in 8 years, she saw something weird on her route. This is video Arnold took on March 27th. She says she didn't start noticing changes until after Albemarle Lithium Mine got the green light from the city to start drilling on the property.
You can see this gray, silver-like mixture coming out of the ground. Brandy Arnold said it used to flow through this area like a dark, milky goo. You could see the gray water seeping into the pond. So I know that if it's clogging up the drain up here, it's also putting all of that into the pond, and now anything that was living is dead.
She noticed black bubbling spots appear in the pond. Arnold says normally there are toads making noise in the pond, but for the last couple of days, it's been silent.
I threw the rock in. Black came up.
Albemarle Lithium responded to our questions about the unknown substance, saying, "We can confirm the substance seen on the Gateway Trail is non-hazardous. It is comprised of rock dust and water that is contained within a system of pipes." The company says the pipe used was decoupled, but the substance poses no risk to the surrounding environment or community.
And so in a lot of ways, what we're actually talking about isn't so much green as it really is just shifting the type of pollution from oil refineries and gas cars that are primarily congested inside of large cities to different forms of pollution from mining and processing taking place out in our rural and natural areas. So apparently to save the environment, we have to destroy it, because that makes sense.
Community groups concerned about the environment protesting Sunday. This year, their message focused on addressing climate change by raising concerns about energy transition projects in Quebec, such as the Northvolt battery plant.
You're building this project that's for the transition, but you're doing it on a place where you have 20 endangered species, a biodiverse forest, and in a region of Quebec where we really don't have many of those left. And so you're destroying nature to protect nature. It makes no sense.
And keep in mind that these lithium-ion batteries have to be charged and recharged with some source of power. And for the time being, that source is overwhelmingly coal-powered electric plants. For better or for worse, that's not likely to change anytime soon.
A new multi-billion-dollar electric vehicle factory is nearing completion in Kansas. The project was made possible thanks to funding from President Biden's renewable energy efforts stemming from the Inflation Reduction Act. However, its completion may also mean the continued existence of a nearby coal-fired power plant. That's because keeping this new factory in DeSoto running will require a lot of energy, something government officials were warned about. Electric resource company representatives say the energy needed for this factory requires an amount of electricity equivalent to what is used to power a small city.
Not only will EV cars run off of polluting fossil fuels, but widespread adoption by millions could soon challenge grids powering homes and businesses that already face periodic blackouts.
Blowing up a mountain for coal mining is wrong. I think blowing up a mountain for lithium mining is just as wrong.
Commitment to transforming essential resources into critical ingredients that enable a more resilient world.
There's a lot of irony here for the environmental pretense of all this. Dramatic irony, heavy weaponized irony. A lot of these techniques, if they're not altogether counterproductive to clean energy and environmental notions, then they certainly carry a level of hypocrisy. I mean, no doubt there's problems with the oil paradigm that we've lived under for the past century, but it's really not clear how much better this new paradigm is going to be. I could be wrong about that. I'm not an expert on these topics, but the environmental impact of a technology that's supposedly going to make us super environmental just keeps coming up over and over again. As ScienceAlert.com phrased it, finding a source of lithium that doesn't cause more environmental destruction than necessary is key, but a clean solution is complicated. It's complicated. There are issues with lithium pollution and related health risks that have already been identified in China in the industrial areas where they produce lithium. Just one example pointing to that is the ACS publication, Lithium Pollution and Its Associated Health Risks in the Largest Lithium Extraction Industrial Area in China.
More importantly, our study found that local residents were suffering potential chronic, non-carcinogenic health risks, primarily from consuming contaminated water and vegetables.
Are we about to model the American system on the same problematic techniques? I guess we'll find out. Another article from Elsevier and Science Direct reads, soil contamination with lithium could reach the food chain due to its mobility in surface and groundwaters and uptake into plants. High environmental lithium levels adversely affect the health of humans, animals, and plants. Newspapers from the 1970s highlighted environmental concerns about pollution surrounding North Carolina's lithium plants in Gaston County, which were emitting toxic substances including fluoride, boron, and chloride, but which at that time were not regulated. The Lithium Corporation site is among seven places across the state where industrial air emissions and damage to vegetation seem to be linked. Dr. Arthur McBay and Raleigh, the state's chief toxicologist, says 1 gram, 1/28th of an ounce, of sodium fluoride is enough to kill a person. Whether airborne amounts of fluorides are lethal depends on the compound, the length of exposure, and other factors, some of which might be immeasurable. Despite appearances, there's little reassurance and fleeting evidence about the idea that electric vehicles or even energy capture technologies like windmills and solar panels will actually be better for the environment than the current regime based around fossil fuels. Isn't that just sad? Will it be better at all? The U.S. Geological Survey is also invested in scouring mining waste for critical mining resources that may exist within. They're scouring for these tiny amounts of rare earth minerals that have been in discarded, quote, tailings. They call them tailings, the mining waste. That's the discard piles at these mining sites. They're going back through those. And some people have suggested that could kick up negative environmental stuff. But at any rate, North Carolina is one of the key states that have been named in the Biden administration initiative. Waste from Florida's phosphate fertilizer industry, its own nightmare of environmentalism, and related to the fluoride and drinking water situation, this is also being re-mined for its rare earth elements and could provide a significant gain for the supply chain. Well, you got to keep in mind the dark side of it. A 1979 article in the Charlotte Observer stated, fluorides released from phosphate mining reached harmful levels in Florida grass several years ago, causing cattle's teeth to fall out. They put fluoride in drinking water supposedly to protect your teeth, and here it's causing cow's teeth to fall out. Anyways, in Charleston, fluoride emissions from phosphate plants were so great 20 years ago that they etched window glass, prompting South Carolina regulations on fluoride to follow. In recent weeks, as of September 26, the Harris-Waltz campaign has also called for leveraging resources within the Energy Department and under the Defense Production Act, so basically national security. Defense Production Act, a Cold War-era law that grants the government emergency powers to boost the processing of critical minerals. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have been calling for this in their campaign, and I wouldn't really expect the Trump administration to do any differently, although I don't know what his current position is. So national security is in place. The government is backing these efforts. So if they can get to these minerals, they will get to these minerals in whatever form, and unfortunately with whatever impact to the nation as we know it. Hopefully it's all for the better, but we're going to find out, I guess. So we're at a point where Kamala and Team Liberal are pushing rare earth mining minerals under the bent of combating global warming and hugging and loving the rainbows of environmentalism. Meanwhile, Trump and Team Conservative are pushing rare earth mineral mining under an America First bent. And surely it would make sense to not be dependent upon rival superpowers that are potentially hostile to this country, especially when the country could produce the things it needs for itself. But at what cost? Are they going to destroy important and sacred places, dig up giant portions of land, displace thousands or millions of people, while polluting everything around these areas? And just be blowing up mountains, literally or figuratively, just to scrape up a few relatively tiny specks of minerals here and there? I mean, the deposit that they're most excited about is a 1.11% concentration. That's the best case scenario. This stuff is very thinly scattered, probably across almost all the landscape. Surely it would make sense not to trash the environment and to come up with a better, cleaner technology to live by. But is that what this is going to be? And by the way, if we're doing all of this because we have to, quote, beat China so they don't dominate us, why then is Illinois giving China over $500 million in incentives to build a $2 billion, 150-acre EV battery plant in Illinois, inside the country, to dominate us?
Well, funny you should ask, because apparently that's not the only place that China's building one of these huge plants.
Explain to me how big this factory will be. Does it go through this entire area?
Oh, yeah. Everything that you could possibly see.
And in Michigan, which has been reported as becoming the center of U.S. battery manufacturing, multiple battery plants have been in the process of being put in there that are directly tied to the Chinese Communist Party.
The excitement has been mixed with concerns about the factory's impact on the environment and that Ford is collaborating with the Chinese battery company, Contemporary Amperex Technology, to help create the batteries. And I have heard from a number of folks who continually bring up that Ford is partnering with this Chinese company.
No!
No go on Goshen was the rallying cry for nearly 1,000 residents in Green Charter Township, Michigan today.
This is an absolute disgrace, a mockery of the American dream.
But the peace here has turned into rage.
China's our number one enemy. Number one, Chapman, you don't care, do ya?
And they are getting off on the fact that you guys are okay with Communist Party coming to our backyard.
Your allegiance is to China.
My constituents are not for that. They're not for the communist government, the communist Chinese government in our state.
It's just a mistake to be relying on a business that's affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party for our economic future for Michigan. America can innovate. We shouldn't be relying on their technology.
Xi Jinping has put himself in charge of the military-civil fusion that basically says that anything business-related in China has military implications, and they reserve the right to extract that information. So it really puts all these partnerships into question.
The plant is set to be built 100 miles from Camp Grayling, where the Michigan National Guard is training the Taiwan military.
And they're giving them millions and millions of dollars in taxpayer funding incentives to build these massive plants there. They've tried to do this all over Michigan, and in some cases, the pushback has been that people in Michigan have voted out their entire local and county governments over this.
Have steps been taken to start construction on this plant that we're talking about?
Yeah, they've put a couple of spades in the ground, but think about what's happened. So all of the people that voted to allow this to happen lost their election, not only just at the township level, but at the county level. They've completely flipped both of those. So this isn't just a one-off somebody who just doesn't want development in their community. This is a genuine concern. This is part of this big equation of the government of Democrats in Washington, D.C., telling you we're going to pick your car. We're going to make you drive an electric vehicle. We're going to make car companies build electric vehicles. Oh, and by the way, we're going to bring a Chinese company with Chinese workers, by the way, coming in to a Michigan community to build components of a battery where 85% of every electric vehicle, the components of it have to be processed in China.
Why doesn't anybody anywhere explain how it makes any sense at all to frame this entire thing in terms of we can't be reliant on China? That's why we have to mine everywhere all over our entire country so that we cannot be reliant on them. But we're going to go ahead and court them like it's an old-timey wedding and give them millions and millions of dollars to come build gigantic factories here that are going to be largely reliant on Chinese components for everything that's in that factory. And some of them are even bringing in outside workers. What make it make sense?
This is just so bad for America on so many levels.
Make it make sense.
When News Nation reviewed Goshen's corporate documents, we found this alarming clause. The company shall set up a party organization and carry out party activities in accordance with the Constitution of the Communist Party of China.
Explain to me how big this factory will be. Does it go through this entire area?
Oh, yeah. Everything that you could possibly see.
How stupid do they think everybody is? It's just not even a very well-constructed narrative.
They weren't Republicans and Democrats. A lot of them just wouldn't even identify either way. This is just a grassroots community movement that understands having this big Chinese plant that's going to be dealing with toxic materials. And by the way, they missold it. They said, oh, there's a rail there that will take these materials in and out. There is no rail there. I mean, there is nothing honest about the way that the government and Democrats force this thing down this community's throat. And you can see by the shots there, these are very idyllic farms. There's horse farms there. There's cattle farms. I mean, it is really beautiful there. And to plop this very toxic battery factory in the middle of all this, I tell you, it just makes no sense whatsoever. And they wouldn't have to do it if they didn't mandate, they being the Democrats, mandate that you have to drive an electric vehicle.
But here is truly the most wonderful and exciting thing I've ever had the chance to talk about. It's the Westinghouse Total Electric Home. A home where electricity does everything. Heats, cools, illuminates, launders, preserves and prepares foods, entertains. It even lights a path to the front door with Rayescent strip lighting. As visitors approach, more lights go on automatically to say a cheery welcome. Then, when they arrive at the door, a television camera takes their picture to tell the hostess her guests have arrived. When you step inside the Total Electric Home, you step into an entirely new concept in living.
Fascinatingly, an older article from circa 1978 out of Asheville, North Carolina, touted lithium as a, quote, miracle element and argued that it was going to be the basis of a new paradigm of energy. H.E. Uhlen, president of the Lithium Corporation of America, based there in Gastonia, North Carolina, stated, "We are not running out of energy. We're just in a transitory period. There's a great new world just around the corner. We are approaching an era where we will no longer need oil and coal for energy. These will be freed for other uses, and for energy, we will use lithium." And he claimed that 1 pound of lithium contains the same energy as 27,000 barrels of oil. Among a host of applications in production, lithium is used in batteries, notes this 1978 article. Therein lies its great value for the future. In the future, automobiles will be powered with rechargeable lithium batteries. In tests, we have run a Ford Maverick 289 miles without recharging its lithium battery. This product is only 5 years from marketing. Without question, Uhlen said, the lithium batteries that could be recharged 1,000 times will power the automobiles of the year 2000 300 miles between charges. The life of such a battery will be 300,000 miles. They will produce no exhaust pollution. Our environment will be cleaner. This conception of electric vehicles based on lithium-ion batteries stated back in the 1970s is almost the same as the version the public has been offered in the present time. The cars of the 1970s were reportedly getting the same mileage range as electric cars today, at or around 300 miles, and supposedly back in the 1970s they were going to be ready for market within 5 years, back when Elon Musk was still just a child. These things were supposedly ready for market then. So what stopped it? Why didn't it happen? At the moment, North Carolina imports all of its energy except for a little wood, but because of its lithium deposits, North Carolina will ultimately become the source of all energy used in the United States. That's what he said back in the 70s. So the plan for this technology has been underway for not quite half a century. It may have been plausibly conceived of even longer back than that as a byproduct of the nuclear industry, other advances in industrial chemistry that were taking place, but it's not being implemented until this time period. Among its many other uses, lithium was the source of power for the hydrogen bomb, according to the article. And as the article brags, all of this will come from right here in our own backyard. How great is North Carolina's supply? North Carolina produces 80% of the U.S. supply. The mine we're working in now has a 50-year supply, and we have other deposits within the state. They got other places in mind. Just where those are located may not currently be disclosed for a variety of reasons, but they're apparently there. Other deposits may plausibly be discovered in the near future. Again, the USGS is leading a discovery and survey process for new deposits nationwide, and North Carolina is undoubtedly a special place of emphasis for this search.
And if you look around where you live, you might be surprised or not to find something like this is cropping up in your own backyard. I mean, we found out that officials and citizens have been attempting to fight off a lithium battery storage project in our own rural county here in Central Texas just this past July. And the company came to the commissioner's court because they were actually seeking a property tax abatement, alleging this is going to create 200 jobs and everything. We had citizens getting up saying things like, I'm against battery storage facilities wherever they are. You know, are these batteries coming from China? We're a conservative county. We don't want it here. And we'll fight until there's no fight left. We had a guy stand up in our meeting and say, when are we going to stop trusting the government? This green energy stuff's a hoax. And how this isn't going to replace natural gas or nuclear resources. I mean, that's the kind of county I live in. But really, it came down to one of our precinct commissioners saying, we don't have the sufficient resources or ability to put out these fires. And that guy is actually a volunteer firefighter with the volunteer fire department. And this is one of the main central issues. It's these fires that can happen from these lithium ion batteries.
A battery fire like this one starts in a single cell via a chemical process called thermal runaway. We actually have X-ray footage of this happening shot at thousands of frames per second. This is the top of a cell similar to this one. This is a pressure release valve, and right now it is rupturing, which should prevent an explosion by relieving the pressure, but watch this. Gas buildup pushes the internal components of the battery upward, blocking the valve until it fails and you get an explosion. You get a chain reaction that spreads to even more surrounding cells, and pretty soon you've got a massive battery fire.
Around 50 electric vehicles caught on fire in Normal, Illinois at a Rivian plant. And initial reports were stating the actual Rivian plant itself was on fire. But after further investigation, it was found that it wasn't actually the plant itself that was on fire. It was a number of vehicles in a parking area. Overall, about 50 vehicles were damaged.
They don't burn like normal fires do.
It's all science, but basically, you're only actually carrying half of the energy in your car in fuel, and it takes quite a lot to ignite that. It needs a proper spark. You actually need to go in and set fire to the fuel. When it comes to electric cars, you're carrying all of the energy in the battery pack, like everything. You're not mixing anything else from the outside into it, so you're carrying this immense amount of energy around with you, and there are various things that can cause it to erupt. Obviously, if it gets punctured, if you're in an accident, there's a serious risk of it going off. But on top of that, the way that the energy gets released is really scary when you've got one of these big battery packs that catch on fire, that get punctured, etc.
And water is not very effective at putting them out.
Bloomfield Township Fire Chief John Leroy knows firsthand the problem.
We just know that it's going to need a lot more water. Whereas opposed to in the past, a simple car fire, we could fight it with one tank of water on our truck. However, now the EVs, we're going to know we're going to need to hook to a fire hydrant to try to put it out.
Of course, our highways aren't lined with fire hydrants, which means simply letting the vehicle burn itself out.
So an EV fire, I learned, burns at roughly 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, while a gasoline-powered vehicle burns at around 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. While it takes 2,000 gallons of water to extinguish a burning gasoline-powered vehicle, putting out an EV fire can take 10 times more water.
This fire took 6,000 gallons of water to put out, and this one took almost 20,000.
Those fires proving very difficult to put out.
So how much water would you put on a typical gas-powered car?
Sometimes we just take a tank of water on the engine, around 750 to 1,000 gallons.
How much on something
these,
like this?
These, you know, we're doing 8,000-plus gallons of water, just constant flow, trying to cool them down and stop the battery.
So like 10 to 12 times the amount of water is required to put a car out like this?
Easily.
So it takes way more water to put them out. Not only that, but lithium-ion batteries generate their own oxygen, causing the fire to burn a lot longer than other fires do. Not only that, but when these batteries get hot, they don't just catch on fire, they explode like a bomb.
It's a vehicle in a parking lot. At 12:10, they arrive. 12:16, they've got their hand lines stretched, they break out a window, they start spraying water inside the vehicle. But at this point in time, the vehicle's completely full of smoke. They can't see anything inside, they're not really sure what they're putting water on. At 12:19, they break out a second window. 1 minute later, It launches that removable roof up into the air.
In the video, a white color new energy vehicle that was charging suddenly exploded.
A neighbor's cell phone caught the moments a battery exploded in someone else's garage.
The Vincent Thomas Bridge could be closed for at least another 24 to 48 hours. This after a semi-truck carrying a load of lithium-ion batteries overturned and caught on fire.
Watch as the drone moves closer and then the trailer explodes. This is causing a massive traffic backup as trucks try to get out of the port. And that fire has now been burning for more than 6 hours.
I mean, you could see why they were using it to make bombs during the Cold War. But some say it's not actually the initial fiery explosion part that's the worst, but the vapor cloud explosion that happened, which is absolutely super toxic.
But believe it or not, this isn't the scariest thing that can occur when a lithium-ion battery degrades or is damaged. That would be a VCE, or vapor cloud explosion, as we shall see in this video.
Between 6 and 11 seconds, the heavy metal nanoparticles. What we realized from our experiments in the literature, if you only partially charge a lithium-ion battery and you abuse it, it need not ignite. You can either delay ignition or it doesn't occur at all. Then the hazard flips from fire to explosion. From our research, we reckon it's between 500 and 6,000 litres per kilowatt hour of vapor cloud, not including the small droplets of solvent. You always get two forms of vapor cloud, heavier than air and lighter than air, and only one dominates, and we don't know how to predict this yet. Now you can see the heavier than air vapor cloud. Imagine that in the bedroom cupboard on the third floor of a terraced house with a battery energy storage system next to the hot water tank. Lithium-ion batteries go into, become unstable at about 70 degrees centigrade.
A burning shipping container full of lithium-ion batteries sent a noxious cloud into the East End air on Monday afternoon. Librado Gallardo works right across the street from the Port of Montreal, where the blaze raged for hours.
We couldn't breathe. Yeah, very hard time to breathe.
According to the Montreal Fire Department, the fire began at 2:45 p.m. Monday. Some said the smoke smelled like burning plastic and made it impossible to breathe.
So for our little county, this company wants to put a lithium battery storage facility in a location that is A, prone to drought, and B, has a volunteer fire department. And I don't know if you're familiar with those kinds of rural areas, but when I was a kid, I lived in a small town where a house a block away from the volunteer fire department actually burned down because it's volunteers and they had to get there and they didn't get there in time. And there's no shade on the volunteers. It's just that's how that works. They're volunteers. So our county is just basically the worst location ever for such a thing as this, right? It's if one of these things explodes here and the place catches on fire and basically has to just burn itself out because there's not enough water to put out the fire, and it won't matter anyway because water doesn't really do anything to a fire that's creating its own oxygen. The longer that goes on, the longer the potential for burning down the rest of the town and the county along with it.
Even though Helene is long gone from Florida, it is still wreaking havoc. Officials say salt water is causing electric vehicles to catch fire.
Water and the ion batteries do not mix, and they literally explode.
I don't know if you guys saw the video that happened during these hurricanes. There was a guy that had, somebody had a camera in their garage that was aimed at their electric vehicle, and the car still caught on fire and exploded and burned, even though the car itself was sitting in water, okay?
Salt water that is flooding can get into the battery and dry there. And once it dries, it creates what federal safety officials call bridges between cells. And that can lead to fires. And that those fires can come anywhere from days to weeks later.
Our increasing number of tow truck drivers and companies who are just refusing to tow these vehicles.
Yeah, pretty much so. Very dangerous cars to tow. They have a potential to catch fire at pretty much any time.
Storing flooded EVs is increasingly a problem.
This field has been specifically designated for electric vehicles that have been flooded out by Hurricane Ian. Every single one of them has to be spaced 50 feet apart in case they spontaneously burst into flames.
And this is the main reason the people in my county are fighting off this battery storage project. It isn't because of toxic fumes or potential groundwater pollution or environmental reasons. And I'm pretty sure that people would love to have more jobs in a very small rural area.
SuperRide's car restoration is open again, less than 24 hours after being evacuated, along with hundreds of other nearby businesses. When a lithium-ion battery fire erupted Thursday afternoon, a few hundred yards away at the SDG&E storage yard. The reason for the evacuation? Toxic fumes coming from the burning batteries.
The schools canceled classes in Escondido today after that fire at a battery storage facility.
Now residents in the North County city are raising concerns about these sites as developers look to build another one not too far away.
But it's the very real potential that in the unlikely event that one of these EV batteries were to explode or catch fire or something in the facility catches fire, they simply don't have the natural resources and manpower to fight that fire. And it could definitely become very, very dangerous.
Fire officials say battery fires are difficult to fight since they can't spray water directly on the flames because of the chemicals inside the batteries.
So it's an issue. And that's before you get to the point where, you know, we have massive fires coming out of our factories all the time in this country. I don't know if you guys realize how many fires have happened in our factories in the last few years, but my friend Grace, who runs the channel Really Graceful here on YouTube, she did a series of reports on this, on all the factory fires a couple years ago, because these things happen all the time. I'll put a link below. You can go watch her videos. She was collecting these things just to show how often this happens. It's way more often than people realize. I mean, as we were working on this third section of this report, a shelter in place actually went out in Rogers, Arkansas, at a recycling plant that went up in a nasty plume of toxic smoke. You know, two people were killed and 35 more were sickened when hydrogen sulfide, which causes respiratory and neurological issues, got released from a Pemex facility near where Aaron's mom lives. She sent us a message on that, which is the second deadly incident at that place in recent months. It just came out that the creeks around East Palestine, Ohio, where the train derailment and subsequent purposeful detonation of the train cars happened, contaminated the creeks in the area so badly that workers became sick during the cleanup, and they hid that report from the public until just recently, despite residents' concerns over it because they were also getting sick. And by the way, there's a class action lawsuit that's now offering those residents $25,000 to compensate them for any future illnesses they might get.
New at noon, good news for victims of the toxic train derailment in East Palestine. People living near the eastern Ohio town will get at least $25,000 for injuries sustained in the Norfolk Southern train derailment. This money is part of a $600 million class action settlement. Lawyers negotiated to have the estimated injury payments increased from the initial $10,000 offer. In order for people to receive an injury payment, they would have to give up rights to file claims against the railroad if they develop cancer or serious health issues later.
And a group of them have filed an appeal because they're all pretty sure that $25,000 is not going to cover whatever that's about to be. And so this is just another one of these catch-22s. We live in a country, okay, where the evidence for harm, the burden of proof for harm from chemicals that companies produce, for example, is placed on the average people, you know, that live in the areas around these corporations, and they drink the water and maybe they get sick. Then they go get a test done and then they find out, oh, there's something in this water that's making me sick. You know, then they have to provide that data to the company. A lawsuit maybe happens, it gets drug out for years, eventually it gets settled with some settlement where they don't admit any culpability at all, and then maybe after that it gets regulated, maybe it will get ripped, probably not, a lot of cases it doesn't.
I think protecting public order and the public health isn't really controversial, but how we get there is, you know, industry's got a lot at stake here. So.
We don't have anything like proactively regulating uncertain risks to public health in this country. We don't have it. All of the burden of proof and evidence of harm is placed on average people and not on the corporations that produce these chemicals and these dangerous toxins. Okay? That is the country we currently live in.
In America, it falls to us
the ordinary people to prove that these chemicals are toxic before the chemical is regulated by our government. That is simply backwards.
Tens of thousands of chemicals on the market that we have no idea whether they are safe for consumption or not.
I mean, anyone with even the tiniest bit of common sense could see why that's a problem in like 2 seconds. That's easy math. It all needs to change. It's terrible. It's really bad. The way that this is set up is to protect corporations and not people, because they're people too, my friend. But we're supposed to trust that this is going to be fine to do just everywhere, all this mining. There are real concerns around our outdated mining and water laws as it is, before you add a bunch of new processes to it, new experimental processes and new types of mining processes to it.
They say energy transition projects are part of a false transition that continues the destruction of the environment by prioritizing the profit of multinational corporations over the needs of the population.
And in the end, the question is, have we learned anything by these Cold War and now Cold War 2.0 narratives about how we just have to do the weapons race or the brain race, or in places like Buncombe County, North Carolina, and thousands of other sites across the country where they're still trying to clean up the toxic waste that was left behind from all of these Cold War weapons factories like Chemtronics, which they openly admit that place, the groundwater is not even going to be clean until something like 2046. That's how toxic it is. You know, back then, caution was thrown to the wind because we had to win the race against Russia, right? And that narrative took precedence over everything, including logic, including common sense, which we all know isn't so common anymore these days. I mean, we still haven't cleaned up our mess from the Cold War in the 20th century. Now we're being told we have to win the race against China's world domination through rare earth minerals, and all I can say is I just hope we've learned something in the last century about the fog of war overriding our common sense. And in our rush to fix one problem, we're not creating an even bigger problem and just poisoning ourselves and destroying our environment all over again, this time in the name of saving it. That's what I'm saying. I just hope that's not what's actually going on here. And I guess I'll just wrap up this report by saying it's kind of impossible to find old clips these days, the way Google has reconfigured its search and basically shut down the internet aside from official sources anymore. But it's burned into my brain. I will never forget back in the days when we were reporting on Janet Napolitano when she was Homeland Security Secretary. Towards the end of her tenure, she was going around talking about how vulnerable our aging electric grid was and how it could be the next big attack. She did this speaking engagement, and it had a question and answer session at the end, and there was a guy on the panel sitting in the back, and the memory of this is burned into my brain matter, okay? He said something about how a lot of this new smart grid infrastructure that they want to put in and build in this country cannot be just slapped down and upgraded over the top of the old stuff. It won't work. It has to be built from the ground up. And we learned that ourselves the hard way when a smart meter got slapped on our house, which was built in the early 90s, and it was causing electrical issues. And when we finally got it removed, when we opted out and got them to come take it out, we were actually told we were lucky our house didn't burn down because the way this smart meter was installed on it was all janked up in the box, and it was wrong because the house itself was not built at a time that it was meant to accept one of these meters. So we know we're moving towards smart grid infrastructure all over the place, but some of this smart grid, some things can be upgraded, but other things have to be built new from the ground up. I think what frustrates me is the obvious debunking of straw men that they do in the wake of these events when people start to get conspiratorial about other things that could possibly be going on. Because you always see this in the mainstream media, and I'm going to explain to you right now how it works. They go find the most extreme form, first of all, of the claim, and then they take down each little tiny detail of the extreme form of the claim while sidestepping the entire substance of what the claim is based on altogether. And they take down the straw man, and then they act like it's all debunked. This one, for example. Asheville, North Carolina sits on top of billions of dollars of lithium. Well, we don't know what's under Asheville, North Carolina, actually. We don't. But Asheville, North Carolina is just one city in this entire geographical area the size of Belgium. So picking one large city and saying Asheville, North Carolina doesn't really mean a whole lot. Billions of dollars of lithium, they don't know that. Nobody knows that right now. Neither does the USGS, and that's why they're doing surveys in the area with new Earth MRI technology to look over 3,000 feet down below the ground to see what's under there, which they just announced. And there are people who are getting really mad, and they're saying, we already know where the lithium mines are in North Carolina. They're farther to the east, and we already know about that. No, we don't know about that. If everybody knew about what was in North Carolina, they wouldn't be running USGS geological surveys looking 3,000-plus feet below the ground with new technology trying to find new critical earth minerals. They wouldn't be doing it if they already knew what was there, obviously. So they are looking for these things, and they are looking for them in Western North Carolina as we speak before this happened. And the same month they announced they were going to be looking there is the same month that you had BlackRock, who's part of that minerals partnership, buy $200 million more in shares of Albemarle, which is reopening Kings Mountain lithium mine. And even back in the day, the people who were running those lithium mines back in the day said they didn't know where everything was that was possibly in the state, and that there was probably more stuff out there. And then he goes on to debunk the next part and say, this is the outcome of a well-orchestrated man-made disaster. You know, they're creating hurricanes. I don't think I've ever seen anybody make the claim that they're creating from nothing hurricanes. I've seen other verbs when people are concerned about it, words like seeded, words like steered. There are patents for things. There are all kinds of there's a lot of research and information out there of things that have been done. That is so on record. It's out there that the military was trying to do those exact things back during Project Storm Fury. But he says all of it like you're just a complete idiot if you think about the things that are going on in North Carolina right now and put two and two together and say to yourself, wait a minute, could there be something else happening here? I mean, it's not totally insane for people to be concerned about this. You can see why. I mean, if I lived there, I would be. But then again, anywhere in this country is up for grabs right now. They don't seem to care. They don't care if it's, you know, Native American land. They don't care if it's BLM land. They don't care if it's sacred places like the Black Hills in South Dakota. I don't think they care right now about much. If they need to go get these minerals, they're going to go do it. They've declared national security, and this is what is up. I think it's free game. They're doing these flights everywhere. Because they're looking for it everywhere they can get it, everywhere they can find it right now. That's a fact. These are all facts. So I really wish people would stop treating these people like that. I mean, they've already been through enough. These people have been through hell. A lot of them are extremely concerned. And by the way, the county that Asheville's in wasn't on that list. But you know what county was on that list? Rutherford. They announced that they were going to be looking there. That's one of the counties on the list, and there are several other Western North Carolina counties also on that list. And even if one specific county or one specific geographical area wasn't on this particular announcement with this particular list, that doesn't mean anything because they're doing multiple flights over the same state in different places. These are just contracted flights, which means private equity firms like, oh, I don't know, just spitballing here, BlackRock could also be contracting with those flights to check out for themselves what's going on anytime they want, whenever. Let's stop pretending to be so naive, okay? Can we please look around? Look at what's going on in our society right now, the precipice of massive change that we're all standing on and all the crazy, crazy stuff that's happening. And then pretend like, don't worry, everything's fine. I'm sure it's fine. Like, come on. There's just no excuse to be that naive at this point in our history. There just really isn't. It's not insane for these people to be concerned about these things that are going on around them. We should all be concerned about everything that's happening right now in this freaking country around us and stop pretending like if we just ignore it, it's not happening. It's happening. These things are happening. And putting your head in the sand and just trying to act like you can ignore it, it's not going to make it stop happening, okay? I don't know who needs to hear that, but that is what is up.
The ongoing search for new rare earth minerals 3,000 feet below the ground to mine in North Carolina, a place which admittedly has a rare combination of minerals in the ground as it is, might be why so many people are concerned about their property following this rare once-in-a-thousand-year weather event that flooded the area out, pretty much destroyed it. And considering that much of that property was not covered by insurance when it was wiped out, it's going to be a major problem.
When they first moved in, the two were required to have flood insurance. But after 3 years, Libre, Pamela's husband, said the flood maps were redrawn and their home was no longer required to have it.
No longer included in the floodplain, the 100-year floodplain. There was mention of a 1,000-year floodplain. At any rate, the requirement from the bank was no longer mandatory to have the flood insurance. We're not wealthy people, so we opted out of that coverage.
But if it's $600 a month and you have a mortgage on top of that, it's just really hard to do.
To act like these people are crazy for having such a concern and wondering what else might be going on when these geological surveys are taking place and when it's a known hotbed for the most sought-after mineral in the new paradigm for our country in the years just ahead. With all this going on, it just adds insult to injury to try to shame people out of that kind of talk or try to act like it couldn't be happening. It's just insulting as usual. This transition is going to be massive. It's got pros and cons. I'm not necessarily saying it shouldn't be done, but people should realize and consider and weigh the cost of this. Is this the best way to live? Is this the only way to live? Is this the only way to replace the whole oil and gas fossil fuels paradigm with another paradigm that requires extensive mining and a lot of other potentially polluting processes? Think about it. I didn't know a bunch of this stuff. I don't know if you did. Is the drastic reorganization of national priorities akin in some ways to the Manhattan Project? Is it worth it? Will this paradigm address the environmental problems at hand, much less the very human problems of people whose way of life is being impacted by the scope and scale of these fundamental historical projects? Skeptics are skeptical. Cynics, cynical. And realists feel like this might really be some bullshit.
This is a massive shift in our country to a whole new paradigm. And it's just weird that people aren't really talking about it in its practicality on the actual ground. We've all seen a few of the cars here and there, but this is a whole thing that's happening. And it just feels like people should realize this is what's going on so that it can be more widely discussed. And my friend Grace, she goes by Really Graceful here on YouTube. She drove through the area herself because it's a place that she visits often. And she said it's so far beyond what is being reported in the media, how devastated these areas really are. And she told me that a mainstream media outlet contacted her trying to ask if they could use her footage for their report. And she said, why aren't you there? Why aren't you getting your own footage? The people in North Carolina are still suffering. There are places that still don't have water or electricity. And they're running in things on mules now. Some of these videos that are coming out look like the 1860s. Like we just went back in time in a time machine. So it's going to get really cold there. I'm not sure how the winter is going to go for these people that are sleeping in tents, but I'm going to go ahead and place all the links below for people to still donate for helping these people. And it's not over for them. It's been weeks now, but it's only just begun.
All right, this is not a fun update, but I've been up there multiple times and I keep getting sick. This is just for the first responders out there. You have to wear a mask. But there's something that's causing me to get bronchitis, sinus infections. I feel like every time I go up, I come back and I'm sick. Now I'm on amoxicillin, inhalers. So I know it sucks to wear a mask and it's hard to work in them, but I don't want to find out in like 5 years we shouldn't have been breathing that stuff.
We're at a stage where we actually don't know what we're doing because we don't really have an option of moving right now, especially with the economy and inflation and everything. Definitely do not want to live here if they do come through. We don't want to raise our kids here and risk everything. And, you know, so we don't really know what we want to do or what we're going to do.
You can have your cake and you can eat it. Make life sweet, it's hard to beat it. What a thrill to be so free when you live better electrically.